Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your absolute number one favorite Saturday show, exclusively here on WEEB. I'm Steve Woodward, joined by the slightly gimpy David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve.
Good of you to come in, despite your rather severe knee injury.
Yes, I was working on repairing our HVAC system at home, and I suffered this knee injury. So. Denying
a slew of illegal immigrants from a good day's labor?
Yes, yes. Oh. I took matters into my own hand, and I'm glad to report that both HVAC systems are up and running.
Well, this is the good time of year to have that
skill
up and running, yeah, because
yes. It's
been a little warm, they tell me. I don't know.
I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I try to stay indoors as it is, so it's not a big deal. But yeah, the heat wave, the climate change, it's been a pretty good week for the climate change hysteria people. Maybe I'm having a heat stroke right now. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
We're back a little later in the show. I want to let you know that we're going to have a conversation with a fabulous social media personality. She goes by Margot in Western NC, Margot in WNC, and she has been all over the situation in the western part of the state since last year's flooding crisis, and she's also a close monitor of all things North Carolina politics, and she joins our friend Sloan Rackmuth twice a week. And they do a wonderful podcast called NC Political Tea. So later in the show, we'll have Margot from Western NC joining us. Well, it's time once again to address the burning question of who is this week's public enemy number one? And I thought we had a clear winner. It was actually going to be two entities. But then a news development came along just in the middle of the week. Which is somewhat consequential, I would say. We learned that the appointment left to House Representative Neil Jackson, who represents Moore County, the appointment to the Sandhills Community College Board of Trustees, which was left to him. He gets one of the picks, and he chose to reappoint current board chairman Larry Cadell, who has been on the Board of Trustees, I believe, since the George H.W. Bush administration or somewhere in that vicinity. Not that there's anything terribly wrong with that, but we need to talk a little bit about this decision by Neil Jackson to appoint Mr. Cadell, who is like a number of members of the Board of Trustees, well beyond the pre-established retirement age.
Here's the issue.
And it's not about, this is not about age bashing or anything. This is about the sort of repositioning this board to move the college into the future. And that's really what we should be focused on as a board of trustees. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I am a member of the board of trustees entering my third year. Just so you know.
So here's the scoop, right? The reason why this is important enough. I mean, look, the public enemy number one was CNN and the New York Times for attempting to undermine and lie about the foreign policy of the United States. How could Neil Jackson's decision top that? I'll tell you why. Because this is Neil Jackson coming out of the closet. Neil Jackson in this appointment. Look, everybody knows that Larry Cadell, through his actions, he's been on the Board of Trustees for 20 years, right? 20, 30 years. Yeah. He is the one who hired and put up with Dempsey. He's the one who was vice chair and oversaw the implementation of DEI at Sandhills Community College, voted for it every time. He's the one who scheduled and conducted a decade long of improperly noticed meetings with minutes that weren't kept. He's the one who scheduled those illegal public meetings at exclusive country clubs in gated communities, right? He's the one who allowed Dempsey to ignore HB2, the bathroom bill.
That would be former President John Dempsey.
Right. Yes. So Cadell is the poster child for the uniparty establishment swamp in Moore County. The reason why this is a seismic event is if you've ever wondered about Neil and where he was, or if you ever wondered if, well, you know, he's a preacher, he'll stay true to his core values, and be a conservative during the tough times. Well, if you've ever wondered about that, we now have the answer, because this is Mr. Jackson coming out of the closet and proving to everyone, to see everyone, because everyone in Moore County knows who Larry Cadell is and what he stands for. Neil Jackson, in spite of that, and every single conservative person in Moore County that I know has let our elected representatives know. In spite of that, Mr. Jackson came out of the closet and clearly showed all of Moore County that when the chips are down, he's going with the uniparty establishment. That's not what we want in an elected official.
And, you know, unfortunately, we see what happens when longtime public servants stick around too long. Sometimes, through no fault of their own, they simply begin to age. And once they decline, the decline can be very rapid. We certainly saw that. The most noteworthy example of that was the former president of the United States, Joe Biden. It can happen to anyone, regardless of their current state of mental and physical health. But beyond that, this is not about age bashing, because we're all going to get there, and I'm getting closer than I'd like to admit. But this is about turning the page and setting this college, which is a valuable asset in this community, on a new course. This is about reforming, removing the ghosts of DEI, which still live.
On
the website and within the faculty.
A $6 million failed audit. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And you know what? This is my new challenge. I know I've got a pretty good idea of where to look at Sandhills Community College, and we're going to take a look at a few things, and we're just going to keep reminding the world. I am going to keep reminding Moore County of all the stuff that happened under Larry Cadell's watch, and everyone's going to know that Neil Jackson, with full knowledge of all that stuff that's happened, because it's been on the Daily Haymaker, and Neil reads the Daily Haymaker. Neil cannot say that he did not know about all this stuff that happened on Larry Cadell's watch. And I'm going to be there every day, every week, to remind people in Moore County and Randolph County that what Neil Jackson did, because Neil Jackson was told. Neil Jackson had all the evidence in front of him. In spite of him, he felt pressured or whatever to nominate. So no. This is Neil Jackson coming out of the closet, and it will forever change my perception of him, and it should give everyone else in Moore County pause.
And I will add, and this is to end this little segment on a more upbeat note, also appointed to the Board of Trustees recently, by Senator McInnes, was former Sheriff's Deputy Maness. And the point is, we have a board right now which I think has the potential to be reform-minded, to hold to account our administration and faculty. And so I'm very optimistic about that. you know, one or two people do not have the ability to control the board, though they may think they do. So just keep that in mind.
Well, okay, let's talk about that. As Robert Levy clearly demonstrated, and Larry Cadell and George Little have clearly demonstrated, one or two people with a completely rubber stamp, you know, just there for the prestige board, absolutely control stuff. If you look at the Moore County School Board, Robin Calcutt and Dr. Locklear are all of a sudden best buddies. They run around together like a couple assistant principals, la, 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 when they don't understand the role. So, no, that's been the problem with both the school board and the Sand Hills board, is you've got one or two people who are in cahoots with the person they're supposed to oversee, and then the rest of the board just rubber stamps it because they're just there for the cocktail parties.
I can see where you would have that experience based on that impression based on your own experience.
Well, based upon historical precedent.
Yes. So all I can say is that we can be the change if we want to. And I believe that.
Good. Well, let's see it. But you know, I continue to see unanimous. Well, I went back and looked at the minutes of the meeting for Sand Hills Community College a year or so ago before you and Beth Ann. I went back 3 years, and there was never, not once, a non-unanimous vote.
That's true.
3 years, there were nothing but unanimous votes.
And that, to a degree, and that does sort of tend to continue.
Right. Start. No. Nay. Nay. Practice saying it. Nay.
But
nay.
There's always abstaining as well, which I have done from time to time. But we were going to brand Public Enemy Number One on the behinds of CNN, the Commie News Network, and the New York Slime, New York Times, because they both rushed in the hours after the wildly successful B-2 bombing of the Iranian nuclear enrichment sites. They rushed to challenge the outcome of those initiatives by our brave men and women. They cited totally unanimous sources in to infer that the bombings had not done very much, that they may have set back Iran's nuclear ambitions by months only, not permanently or by many, many years. And, of course, you know, we would sort of expect that from these scumbags, but I tell you who wasn't having any of it was our Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Play clip one.
The instinct of CNN, the instinct of the New York Times is to try to find a way to spin it for their own political reasons, to try to hurt President Trump or our country. They don't care what the troops think. They don't care what the world thinks. They want to spin it to try to make him look bad based on a leak. Of course, we've all seen plenty of leakers. And what do leakers do? They have agendas. And what do? Do they share the whole information or just the part that they want to introduce? And when they introduce that preliminary report that's deemed to be a low assessment. You know what a low assessment means? Low confidence in the data in that report. And why is there low confidence? Because all of the evidence of what was just bombed by 12, 30,000 pound bombs is buried under a mountain, devastated and obliterated. So if you want to make an assessment of what happened at Fordow, you better get a big shovel and go really deep, because Iran's nuclear program is obliterated. And somebody somewhere is trying to leak something to say, oh, with low confidence, we think maybe it's moderate. Those that dropped the bombs precisely in the right place know exactly what happened when that exploded. And you know who else knows? Iran.
Very well said by Secretary Hegseth. And I think that as time goes on, we will see that was complete rubbish reporting by these long ago discredited former news organizations.
Well, it's not. Yes, you're glad you included the news organization, because Hegseth in his press conference blamed the leakers, which is true. They selectively leak. They leak stuff that's low confidence. No one believes it. But, you know, it's an intel report, so it's assessed. But The other part is that you picked up on is it's not just the leaker. Frequently, the media knows the truth. They either have both sides of the story and they know the truth, or someone's leaked and they have other evidence that says that's not credible. But guess what? They run with it anyway. They ignore the other evidence and they run with it anyway. I mean, we see it at the editorial page of the Pilot. That's what the media does. Yeah. It's not always what they print. It's what they don't print.
Yeah, it's just the ongoing Trump derangement syndrome. You know, the ceasefire is not going to hold. Look, it's not going to hold. It's not going to hold. Well, it's holding. Right. You know, Trump's going to NATO. It's a waste of time. It's just a performative. Well, what does he do? He leaves NATO with a slew of countries now agreeing to pay into the NATO defense budget at a level that they've never done before.
Well, suffice it to say, you cannot hate the media enough.
You cannot. Loathing is another term I like.
Yes, you cannot loathe the legacy media enough.
You certainly cannot. Although there's someone else who we may learn to hate quite deeply, and he dropped his own 30,000-ton bomb on New York City last week in the Democrat primary for mayor.
He dropped Rosie O'Donnell and Stacey Abrams from helicopters.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
As God is my witness, I thought Rosie O'Donnell could fly.
Yeah. Well, when pigs can fly, then she'll be right there with them. Zohran Mamdani. Who is that, you might ask? Is he
a Muslim cleric? I think he just took charge of Iran. That's my guess.
Well, he is a Muslim radical. He is a socialist. He is 33 years old.
Who just took over Iran, right?
Well,
he's a new Ayatollah.
Maybe that'll be his next his next target. But for now, he's going to settle for what was formerly known as the greatest city in the world, New York City. He upset, you might say, the pathetic Andrew Cuomo in the Democrat primary for mayor of New York, making an incredible comeback in the final days. And literally, this guy's platform is freezing rent, operating city-run grocery stores, providing free buses, free bus trips.
Can I get a free bus?
Around the city.
Oh, a bus trip.
Free bus fare. No fares for bus riding. Oh. He was born in Uganda. And grew up the son of a Columbia University professor who specializes in post-colonial studies.
Yes.
This guy has never actually worked at the age of 33. He was briefly a rapper. And I'm not talking about a I'm not talking
like a
about
Tootsie Roll
a rapper. No. He was not a chewing gum rapper. He was a performative rapper named Mr. Cardamom. And
folks, you can't make this stuff up.
And then he was remarkably elected to the New York State Assembly, and he served 4 years there and decided that he was now ready to become the mayor of New York. So the guy is openly radical. He promises to basically defund the police. We see how well that's worked in other municipalities around the country. And, you know, we could laugh him off, but we did that once with a guy named Barack Obama, and he became president of the United States. So this individual bears close inspection. And, of course, there's time between now and the general, and Cuomo may run as an independent. I think the sitting mayor Eric Adams is still planning to run for re-election in the general. So a lot can happen, but the point is that we are now living in times when a city that has already seen a mass exodus of its population due to high taxes and crime and rampant presence of illegal immigrants, the ones that are left behind think that they can create a socialist paradise and everything's going to be fine. So it's really alarming.
So,
to say the least.
So a couple observations on this, if I could, sir.
Yes.
So first of all, you know what? Those people are going to get exactly what they voted for. So zero sympathy from me. I just don't like their residents fleeing like locusts and inflicting their politics on the South, right? But anyway, those people are going to get exactly what they voted for. But let's look at exactly who elected this guy. It wasn't the minorities. If you look at the polling, he did not, the black people did not support him. The Hispanic, you know, the as the liberals would say, the brown people, what, right? But anyway, the brown people, according to the NAACP, because everyone must be colored unless you're white, and then you're not colored.
I thought that used to be blatantly racist. But anyway.
Anyway, so the brown people didn't elect him. You know who elected him? Rich white people. Yeah. Rich white liberals voted for this clown strictly because he's going to take it to Trump. He's going to do battle with Trump. These people, the people in the street, right? The average people are smart enough not to buy what this guy is selling. But the rich white liberals have Trump derangement syndrome so bad that they will vote for somebody. They'll vote for this guy just because he's going to show Trump. And you know what's going to happen? First of all, he's not going to show Trump. Trump will win. And these people are going to be living in this horrible, like, escape from New York City, like, build a wall, you know, send in the action guy and just film the, you know, a remake of Escape from New York.
Yeah, I don't take any pleasure in thinking about what kind of damage this clown could do, but keep an eye on, because the other person who got elected the exact same way is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC. She was some bartender from Queens, and they said, well, we don't have to worry about her. Next thing you know, she's a member of Congress. So it can happen. It can happen all the time, because you get the right, you get the media behind you, you get some donors fired up about you, and it can happen. So we'll keep an eye on Mr. Mamdani.
Grocery prices are out of control. The cost of eggs and milk has skyrocketed. Some stores are even using dynamic pricing, jacking up the cost over the course of a day, depending on what they can get away with. It doesn't need to be this way. I'm Zahran Mamdani, and as mayor, I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce. We will redirect city funds from corporate supermarkets to city-owned grocery stores, whose mission is lower prices, not price gouging. These stores will operate without a profit motive or having to pay property taxes or rent, and will pass on those savings to you.
Thank you, Mr. Producer. That was brilliantly segued, because that's one of the central tenets of this guy's campaign, is the city-run grocery store. You know, I once visited the Soviet Union before it fell in the late 1980s, and I have actually visited a city-run grocery store. And I can tell you that it was not exactly a memorable shopping experience. You know, if you want soap on a given Monday and they're out of soap, well, then you don't get soap.
Were you there as part of Bernie Sanders' wedding party?
I was not there with Mr. Sanders. no, I was there in 1986 for the inaugural Goodwill Games, but we won't bore people with my world travels at this point.
Oh, you were a broadcaster. You were a sports
I was a journalist,
you were there
yeah.
on business.
I was there working as a journalist back when the profession still had a degree of honor attached to it, believe it or not. That's a long time ago, 40 years almost. So let's fast forward to the week ahead, and I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Hensley. You know, many of you may have missed the fact that there's an elementary school in Moore County, in Carthage, that has a little problem with its drinking water. And I guess this is a good segue from New York City's woes, I guess, in a sense. But let's talk a little bit about why the children of Moore County who attend this elementary school are subjected to potentially unsafe drinking water.
Well, the why is because, I really can't tell you the motives, but I can tell you what happened is Moore County Schools, the central office, has known about brown drinking water at Carthage Elementary for at least 6 years. When I first ran for the school board, it was an issue. I didn't pay much attention to it because it wasn't my issue and I didn't have time to research it, right? But, you know, I certainly heard about it and I heard people complain about it. It just never came up. And then fast forward to the last election, Johnson and Calcutt and Dahl, part of their campaign was, oh my God, there's brown water at Carthage Elementary. They got elected and still no one looked into it. The central office didn't look into it. No one on the school board brought it up. Finally, about 5 months ago, Pauline started getting interested in it.
Pauline Bruno, school board member, yes.
Good conservative. And she started asking questions of the central office. And they stonewalled her. They, you know, normally they'd get right back with a board member. They stonewalled her. Finally, she got fed up and added it to the agenda. And then they got up and completely misrepresented the situation. And I was attending that meeting remotely, and I was watching, and I thought, no, that's not, you are not going to mislead the public and the school board. So I started looking into it and I started asking questions. And yes, the central office knew about this and no one tested the water. They've known about it. They took action. I mean, you can read about this in the pilot because the poor principal was begging, you know, we've been living with this for a decade. And finally, I, being the principal, had water filters installed on the water. So here's how bad it was. They had cloudy / brown water in the pipes. And rather than get it tested, they just put filters on the drinking fountains and the spigots used in the cafeteria. They still didn't test the water, right? Well, we'll just get that brown stuff that we don't really know what it is. We think it might be dirt. We think it might be rust for pipes. And this is just an example of how, you know, bureaucracies, they just bury their head in the sand, whether it's the, you know, they did the same thing at the Southern Pines Elementary School, you know, the hazardous waste site. There needs to be a ongoing monitoring program there. But rather than deal with actual issues, they bury their head in the sand. And what makes it even worse is a month or so ago, I looked and there's a drinking water. You know, they bring bottled water, the big 5 gallon, right outside the superintendent's office, and right there for the senior staff is one of those 5 gallon. You fill your glasses from the purified water, and they have bottled water for everyone else. So, typical bureaucratic fashion, the central office, who's on the same water system, I think it's Carthage, they bring in bottled water for themselves to drink because they're not going to drink that water. Why would you? I mean, it's brown, right? But at the same time, making faculty, staff, students, and visitor drink the brown water at Carthage Elementary. I mean, where is OSHA? Where are the complaints? I mean, if my company was giving brown water to my employees, the Occupational Safety and Health Authority would show up. State authority, someone would show up and shut me down.
And were there parents that were concerned about the water?
You know, it's hard to say. Yes. And there's been groups of parents, but they could never break through the bureaucracy. You know, they just get frustrated and eventually just the inaction. So anyway, I took action on this. I'm like, this is ridiculous. This has been stonewalled for at least 6 years, maybe longer. And you know what? I made a few phone calls. And literally within, because I brought this up in my committee, and I found myself, you know, it was myself, Miss Dahl, Miss Calcutt, and Mr. Locklear. I'm sorry, Dr. Locklear, Dr. Calcutt, and Dr. Dahl. And I'm sitting in a committee meeting, and they are arguing against doing a $600 test on the water. Like literally.
Wow.
Three PhDs arguing why they shouldn't test the water. I left the meeting. On the way home, I made phone calls. 2 hours later, the situation has been handled, right? But the fact of the matter is that the school board, you know, the central office just completely ignored this while giving themselves bottled water. And that's the kind of nonsense that schools do. And, you know, this our central office, is, there's no excuse for it.
So the water has now been tested or will be?
The Moore County Health Department is going to do yearly tests of all the water in all Moore County schools, and they're going to publish the results. So there's going to be tests by the Moore County Department of Health of all the water coming out of the spigots in Moore County schools, because they're going to exercise their jurisdiction, which they have jurisdiction, and they're going to publish the results. I don't think that's happened yet. The central office now has some sort of test they did, you know, they waived, but I want it tested by a third party. I will take the health department's test, you know. In addition to that, the state is going to send inspectors down to test the entire Carthage water system, both at the well site and the production site, and they're going to do tests far greater than what Carthage tests for. They're going to test for forever chemicals such as PFAS and whatnot. And then, you know, depending upon how this thing with Neil Jackson goes, the plan was to introduce legislation next year to require mandatory testing in all public schools throughout North Carolina. Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, Moore County has a $160 million annual budget, and they wouldn't spend $600 to get the water tested just to tell the faculty and staff, look, I'm sorry it's cloudy, but it's rust or it's dirt or it's, I mean, it could be, I mean, who knows, but they didn't even test it.
Yeah, it seems to me that maybe there was a fear of what the tests would reveal.
You would think that Camp Lejeune Water would tell us that, you know, it's probably better to know up front, and if there is an issue, it's probably better to disclose it now rather than 30 years from now have literally billions of dollars worth of lawsuits threatening to bankrupt the taxpayers of Moore County.
And there's another case study in Flint, Michigan from, I don't know, 20 years ago or...
Right.
Thereabouts.
Oh, Flint wasn't even that far long. Was that the lead in the water?
Yeah, they had a severe
That was within the last 10 years or maybe 20 years.
And that was, you know, all the politicians confronted with it over a period of time wouldn't deal with it. And and then people in Flint started, you know, developing illnesses and diagnoses for cancer and other
things. Well, I'll tell you why no one wants to address it, because I insist that it gets addressed, and then finally I get it addressed, and then the editorial writers of the pilot and the supporters of Robin Calcutt and the central office, they make me the bad guy. I mean, that's why no one wants to address it. You have to have an elected official or someone who's getting paid to stand up. And you know what? There aren't many of those to go. There aren't that many. Everyone just, oh, my gosh, I might get criticized.
That's a good point. And which begs the question, if you're not willing to do the right thing, you know, defend the public good, then why would you ever seek these positions in the first place?
You know, going back to public enemy number one, that's a great question to ask Representative Jackson.
Well, maybe we'll invite him in for an interview someday here on the big show. Yeah. I want to remind you that coming up shortly, we will have a conversation with a very effective and very tenacious social media independent citizen journalist. Margot in Western North Carolina will be joining us. Also, in the time we have remaining, I wanted to bring to everybody's attention, if you live in Pinehurst, you may have known a guy named Brian Lally. They called him Wally. Everybody knew him as Wally. He recently passed away. He was just a friend to so many and sort of one of the Pinehurst's unpaid ambassadors. Mark your calendar for July 19th. Beginning at 1:30 at the Pinecrest Inn in the heart of Pinehurst, there will be a celebration of his life. And a lot of your friends and neighbors in Pinehurst are sure to be there. So put that on your calendar, July 19, coming up next month.
And now we are joined by our guest, Margot from Western North Carolina. Margot is a social media presence extraordinaire with a large following, both on TikTok, 150,000 followers there, and on X, formerly known as Twitter, 70,000 followers. Margot keeps her finger on the pulse of all things politics and culture through the conservative lens, both federally and across the state of North Carolina. Good morning, Margo, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Hope y'all are doing well down there.
We are doing great. We are just staying indoors and avoiding the heat, but that's okay. So a couple of days ago, there was a rather earth-shattering ruling by the United States Supreme Court in a case involving the state of South Carolina. The court ruled that South Carolina may stop Planned Parenthood from taking part in the state's Medicaid program. Of course, Planned Parenthood is the leading proponent of abortion in this country. This would allow South Carolina to join Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Texas, who already have removed Planned Parenthood from their state Medicaid networks. What do you think the ramifications of this will be going forward, Margo, and especially here in our state of North Carolina?
I think most conservative states are going to take a look at where they can make these cuts, along with, we know the federal government is doing this as well. I think specifically states like Oklahoma, they're definitely going to take a look at it. But specific to our state, North Carolina, I think this is not, obviously not going to make it into this session, but could very well make it into next session as something that they're willing to take on and cut. The challenge is going to be the veto power the governor has. That's going to be the big challenge.
And, of course, he has already wielded his evil veto pen recently. There were bills passed by both the House and the Senate in Raleigh addressing the very serious problem of the failure in some municipalities of law enforcement to cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a.k.a. ICE. One bill, as I said, came out of the Senate. He vetoed that, and we have in the Senate a supermajority, so they can override that veto. However, in the case of the bill coming out of the House, we are one vote shy of a super, and therefore that override will be more challenging, although not impossible. But the issue we have now with Stein is that he will even, just to satisfy his far-left base, he will veto bills that will stop certain municipalities in blue counties like Charlotte-Mecklenburg from cooperating with immigration, from insisting that they detain illegal immigrants long enough so that ICE can come in and get them on the road to deportation in some cases. You know, Stein will gladly keep our citizens less safe just to wield his veto pen and make the Democrats happy. How do we, I mean, other than the obvious, how are we going to get around that in terms of the lack of a supermajority?
Well, we're going to have people like the one House of Representatives, I'm sorry, North Carolina House of Representatives member that stepped over the line from the Democratic Party to keep her city or her county safe, that we're going to have some more of that, which is, we only had one, but God bless her for doing it. And my biggest concern is Stein and Jeff Jackson both ran on, you know, keeping the citizenry of North Carolina safe, which is a lie. That they have no intention of doing that. And here we are. We pass good legislation in our North Carolina State House, send it on to him, and he immediately vetoes it. So what that tells you is he's a liar. And we have to promote the pressure on the representatives and the senators to take care of their immediate citizens. And I'll hearken back to what I say to many people. All safety starts local. You know, if you're not looking at your county commissioners, your sheriff's office, your town and city police force to keep you safe, you're not doing it right, because those are where safety starts. So those folks right there. And we have a huge election coming up next year in 2026. All 100 sheriffs are up for election. So if we can't get Stein to do his job, you must elect sheriffs that can do the job that he won't do.
You're right. And of course, the other big veto on his hit list in recent weeks was the veto of the constitutional carry bill, which would have allowed no permit carry as 29 other states do, and he vetoed that too. So you get in a situation where there's a bad guy with a gun and a good guy with a gun. He's trying to handcuff the good guy from being able to potentially intervene in a dangerous situation. And you mentioned earlier the elected official in the Charlotte area who stepped over across the aisle and voted in favor of the bill regarding ICE cooperation. And why did she do that? Because not very long ago, there was a case where a illegal immigrant from Mexico stabbed a pregnant woman over the county line in South Carolina in Rock Hill, then jumped in her car and drove up into Charlotte, where he was ultimately apprehended. But if he had just been a nickel and dime criminal who had been arrested for, let's say, holding up a convenience store, he'd be back on the streets. It took him committing murder for him to be detained. And that's not an extreme. That's exactly what happened. And it's
well, that's an everyday occurrence in North Carolina if you're paying attention. We highlight that, I do, on X, and we do on our show almost weekly so that people are paying attention. It is not relegated to Mecklenburg County. It happens in Wake County, in Guilford County, Iredell County, all the way up here in Buncombe County. I haven't seen it locally in my county, thank goodness, but it's all over New Hanover County and down in the eastern part of North Carolina. And that makes all citizens in North Carolina not safe. And here we have a governor who says, oh, I realize that criminals don't care about permits and they don't care, but you have to care. We have to make you hold you to a different standard than criminals that can go out and get a gun and shoot and kill people.
Yeah, you're right. In rural Lee County, not far from where I'm sitting, a couple of months ago, we had a middle schooler plucked out of the school and taken to a local motel where an illegal immigrant unfortunately raped her. I would hate to think, what kind of how that's going to impact the rest of her life. But, the damage is done and the guy was roaming freely in, sleepy Lee County. So it can happen anywhere. Let's turn our attention to a subject on which you have expertise because of your geographic location. Of course, we're coming up unbelievably on, I guess, the 9-month mark since the devastation of Hurricane Helene on Western North Carolina in the high country. And of course, in those early weeks and months, all of us were attuned to what was happening and the relief efforts and the needs and the volunteering and the donations of money and goods and clothing and food. And I think a lot of us participated in that very, very willingly. But, time has gone by and people get on with their lives. And unfortunately, I think there are a lot of folks who have forgotten about what happened in September of last year. And yet, we know that there are still towns that have not come back yet. We know that there are still many citizens who do not have permanent housing and have no prospect of it in the foreseeable future. Give us a little update, Margo, on the status of Western North Carolina and the state of the recovery.
Well, I'm going to start personally so that it kind of hits home with your audience. This past Monday, they finally repaired our electrical lines, which were swayed and moved slightly and were a safety issue, and our broadband services to fully integrate with the fiber optic network. So that just happened in my town, which was not impacted severely. So can you imagine if you're in like Lake Lure or over in Yadkin County where you're being touched by this on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. Those folks are still very remote and still feeling the consequences of the hurricane. And what I will say is all eyes are on the legislature right now to get this budget passed because of the money that has been sent from the federal government to the state of North Carolina to distribute to North Carolinians in Western North Carolina for infrastructure rebuilds and to boost businesses and homes in recovery and repair. It's slow. It's You know, we found out really quick that insurance companies aren't very nice, even though they act like they're your best friend. Mm-hmm. And we also learned that, you know, very small businesses that stay on shoestring budgets and were relying on SBA loans, those were underfunded in the beginning of the tragedy. So we lost ground on those businesses. And now Kelly Loeffler has done a great job of giving grants out. But we need to augment all the support for tourism, small business, and rebuilds up here because, you know, a year later, we still have folks in temporary housing. We still have folks that don't have broadband internet. They didn't have it before in some areas, but they don't have it permanently now. They have temporary resources for it. And we see the bulk of the money headed to the largest city, which is the largest county, which is Buncombe County. And while Buncombe County deserves a great portion of it, the smaller counties that were hit the hardest, I don't know that they're necessarily being looked at with the needs that they have for debris. Still need a lot of debris cleanup, a lot of business help, and tourism help. I do want to highlight that Lake Lure will finally be taking reservations starting, I think, this weekend. It might be the 4th of July weekend, coming up in the next 2 weeks, to allow people to go back into Chimney Rock in that area. So they're trying to make a really methodical effort to get people back into these areas, but it is very slow. In the Lake Lure area, they literally just got their water resource, their public water resources, turned back on this past week. Hmm. That tells you how much we've had to, you know, move, and how much ground it takes just to get something done after a tragedy like this.
And to what degree is there confidence that state and federal funding is actually making its way to the need, as opposed to being tied up in various pipelines? I mean, is that an ongoing concern?
It's a huge concern when you're looking from the outside in. And I appreciate that you brought that up, because Governor Stein appointed a commission. Of course, everybody but one person is from somewhere else other than Western North Carolina. And the people that he did appoint are from Buncombe County, which does not speak to the larger 23 contingent area of Western North Carolina that had some sort of impact. That's a concern for me. I think the other concern is, while we received we received funding through Joe Biden immediately after the hurricane hit. You know, we've gotten several other large sums in the billion, you know, millions, almost $1 billion. Not all of that has come downstream, and that is a deep concern, that it hits the North Carolina legislature and they start carving it up. That money is intended for Western North Carolina victims, not NGOs that want to help North Carolina victims, not, you know, committees that want to get paid to help North Carolina victims. That is to go to the disaster recovery of Western North Carolina. And I think more scrutiny needs to be put on that, and every dollar needs to be accounted for.
You know, there have been some really uplifting stories that have come out of this. We talked here on the station a number of weeks ago, and maybe I'm going to get the name of the town wrong. Is it Marshall?
Yeah, Marshall in Madison County. Yeah.
Marshall kind of reopened, and I remember reading the article about it, and the citizens basically said, you know, we got up every day and we did this on our own. We didn't wait for help to come. We just did it ourselves, day after day, night after night, and here we are. And while that is an incredible testament to the spirit of those people, I found myself thinking, well, why were they so abandoned? It just shouldn't be that way. And yet, you know, they persevered.
I want to say something that most people don't know about the Appalachian culture up in Western North Carolina is we're used to being ignored. I mean, the saying here is, if you don't live past Hickory, the North Carolina legislature doesn't know you're alive. They don't care. But we here where I live in far western North Carolina, almost touching Georgia and Tennessee, I do touch them actually, we're absolutely ignored. And I believe that Madison County feels the same way. We have become resolved in helping our own citizenry because we have been doing it for centuries. And I'm very proud of what Madison County has done, because many times we have offered assistance to them and they said, we've got it. Think about that. We're up here trying on the other side of Asheville because we actually had clear ways all the way into Asheville and to other areas in Western North Carolina, unlike coming up 40. We would say, hey, how can we help you? And people would come out and tell us, hey, we need this or we need that. Madison was the one county that said, we got this on our own. Let us concentrate on Yancey County or Avery County or Henderson County. That is a testament to the fortitude of those folks.
And the other story that blows my mind is these waves of Amish citizens, I guess from Pennsylvania and other places, who continue to come and continue to literally build houses from the ground up for people. They don't take any money. They don't want anything. They just want to help. It's really incredible.
Well, the Amish are an incredible culture. If you've never been around them, they're extremely giving people, even though they're very to themselves. I had the privilege of living near them outside of Philadelphia. And for some reason, they really gravitated to my mother because she was from a rural area in North Carolina, and they became fast friends. And what I've seen up here is exactly what I saw when my mother became good friends with them. If they're your friend or they want to help you, they're all in. And these folks have done nothing but dedicate their time and their energy to good. And for those of you that don't know, there are people in the Amish community that have been drafted in the past in the military, and they could have just said, hey, I'm Amish, I'm not going to go in, but they were conscientious objectors and became medics and things like that. That's their nature. They're just good, humble people, and they have a lot in common with Appalachians. We're just good, humble people that work hard.
In the time we have remaining, I'm gonna spring a little instant political question on you here, and I'm sure you'll have some answers for me. In two primaries next year, which candidate has the greatest likelihood of being defeated in a primary? Senator Tom Tillis or State Senate President Phil Berger, in your opinion?
In my opinion, we don't have a viable candidate. I love Don Brown with all my heart. He's a great man. He's a great patriot. I support him, but he just doesn't have the funding to beat Tom Tillis. And unless we have a white knight candidate, and I mean that figuratively, to come out of the woodwork like Pat Harrigan, I don't foresee him being beat, unfortunately. But I do see the race for the Senate area in Rockingham County to be a very strong, contentious race, and I'll give you the example of why I think that. First of all, I think Rockingham County is sick of the money and the politics and the nepotism that goes on in that county. And it's not just Rockingham County, for those of you that don't know. There's a small sliver of Guilford County in there, mm-hmm. Pleasant Grove and Jamestown, which is where I grew up. And I will advocate and help Sam Page in Jamestown as much as I can, because I firmly believe that we don't need casinos in North Carolina. And if that is what Phil Berger wants, that is not what we need. And I'm going to help Sam Page win, so I'm all in for Sam Page.
The sheriff of Rockingham County, and to use the casino analogy, I'm glad he's rolling the dice and taking a shot at that primary against the long-entrenched Phil Berger. Margo of Western North Carolina, we thank you very much for joining us. Your insights have been fascinating, and love following you on social media. And tell us again where we can follow you on social media in the time we have remaining.
Sure. I'm on TikTok. I'm Margo IN. That's the Margo INNC. Margo INNC. I don't post a lot over there right now just because I kind of took a hiatus to help my neighbors here in Western North Carolina, mm-hmm. but I'll get back into it. And then you can always find me on X at Margo INN. That's Margo INWNC. So Margo INWNC. I post most of my content over there right now. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, Sloan and I do NC Political Tea. You can see that live on X. I think we stream it on Facebook, and we're getting ready to push it out onto other content platforms like Spotify. We're not going to be on YouTube because they hate us. We use the word COVID. They didn't like that.
Well, that's a badge of honor. So you're on at 8 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays, NC Political Tea.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you again, Margo, and we'll look forward to following you. And we hope to have you back again soon.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for talking about Western North Carolina. I'm glad people haven't forgotten us, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to speak about what is needed up here. Come visit, spend your money, help for other North Carolinians. We really do appreciate it.
I will be headed there in July. Blowing Rock, my favorite place to go in the summer.
That's not Western North Carolina, man.
Well, okay. I'll take some field trips.
All right.
Thanks again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. And I do encourage you this summer, as time permits, to make a trip or two out to Western North Carolina. Spend some money. Support the folks out there. It's a beautiful place to be in the summer. And a great opportunity to help continue their recovery. We thank you for joining us today. We want to thank our sponsor, the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. It has been a joy to spend part of a Saturday with you, and we are going to be taking aim again very soon. Next time, we hope you'll join us then.